It's deja vu. This moment's happened before.
You have found the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Kaleidoscope Gallery. I'm your host, Paul Edwards, and together, alongside contributors Dave and Leah, we will be exploring daredevils and stunt performers of the late 20th century on the threshold of life. So let's step into this exhibit inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
America, where the hell drivers really have something new. Shooting out of a cannon for a jump of 65 feet. But it doesn't always go according to plan. A few minor adjustments and Buddy Toomey of Washington leaps ahead for a thrill bombardment and still lives.
I'm looking for the ultimate statement. Ken Carter, world's greatest daredevil.
Veteran stunt driver Ken the Mad Canadian Carter plans to smash all existing records by jumping a jet car 1 mile across the St. Lawrence River.
It's never been done and it never will be done ever again. So that's where it's at.
What we're going to do this time is without a parachute, without an airbag, I'm going to jump from CN Tower with nothing but a small wire hooked to me.
Only a small wire to hold him while he fell. Only a small wire to break his fall a second before he would hit the ground.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let's give a great Canadian welcome to a man who is known throughout the world as the last of the gladiators, the all-time king of the daredevils, Evel Knievel.
I am a professional life risker, and I am the best in the world at it. There have never been none before me, nor there will never be none after me.
Throughout the early to mid 20th century, daredevils and stunt performers were a staple of sideshows at circuses, the film and television industry in general, and as part of traveling car thrill shows. But it was during the 1970s and early 80s that daredeviling stunt performers captured a global audience that led to worldwide fame for the three daredevils we heard in the intro clip. Namely, Ken, the Mad Canadian Carter, the daredevil who attempted a rocket car jump over the St. Lawrence River. Dar, the Professor Robinson, a stunt performer who meticulously planned two leaps off the CN Tower. And Robert Evel Knievel, who claimed that he was the greatest daredevil that has ever lived. So, strap on a crash helmet as we take a deep dive and explore daredevils and stunt performers on the threshold of life. Another exhibit inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Why do they call them devils? Like, I get the dare part, you know, that you ask them to do something and they're crazy enough to do it. But why associate them with, like, the devil? What have they done? They're generally not. Isn't the devil some kind of religious demon? Like, what is the devil exactly?
Well, perhaps it's because you're taunting God, in a sense that you may be squandering your life or your safety for fame and fortune. Perhaps it's that.
Or you're defying death. And by defying death, you're commiserating with the devil. Or you must make a deal with the devil to survive. If I'm jumping the St. Lawrence, I'd sign a deal with anybody to up my odds. Especially in a rocket car.
With wings.
Wings. Those wings were way too short. It took the Wright brothers a few tries. These guys just say, oh yeah, if you put a couple of things that look like wings on this car, we're going to be able to fly over the St. Lawrence.
I'm looking for the ultimate statement. Ken Carter, yeah. World's greatest daredevil.
Veteran stunt driver Ken the Mad Canadian Carter plans to smash all existing records by jumping a jet car 1 mile across the St. Lawrence River.
It's never been done and it never will be done ever again. So that's where it's at, and we're going to get it done.
Ken clears 5 acres of land, paves a 1,400-foot takeoff road, and builds an 85-foot-high launch ramp.
We can do anything that we want to do, and I mean that, if you work at it hard enough.
He builds a rocket-powered Lincoln Continental with wings. The jet car is fueled by pressurized hydrogen peroxide and nitrogen.
It's one hell of a challenge, and I believe that we're going to be successful with it.
Eventually, Carter's backers lose patience and money. Fearing that Carter has lost his nerve, they find themselves a new madman.
I always liked the state of New York, so I'm sure I hope they like me when I get there.
Behind Carter's back, they hire stunt driver Kenny Powers to fly the car to glory. Powers is an experienced driver, but he's never driven a jet car before. This is his shot. He'll try to fly this jet car a mile across a river into the USA and the record books. Flight lasts only 9 seconds. Powers travels only 506 feet, 4,774 feet short of his target. How does this stunt go wrong so fast? And as for Ken, the Mad Canadian Carter...
This is my dream. This is the end of my dream. I don't care if I never jump again.
Ken Carter, the Canadian stunt driver we were speaking about, who eventually became the subject of... what was going to be the longest car jump in the world.
The most impossible and poorly planned.
Yes, an 8-story tall ramp. That was, and a rocket car. That was the other thing about Ken Carter, is he had a rocket car. And just that kind of at the last minute, just before he jumped, he'd hit the press the button, and a real rocket engine would fire off, and it would just catapult him across an enormous gulf between Canada and America. You know, it was doomed to fail from the outset. But
I don't know who did he work with an engineer, because you wouldn't think so from looking at that setup. The angle's all wrong.
There's an NFB documentary about it called "Devil at Your Heels." There is definitely some kind of lack of oversight or a little bit of pushing the boundaries of safety, because it was going to be the most spectacular thing, and one of the American networks were there to cover the entire thing. It was going to be, we're going to make him worldwide famous.
A big, definitely, you know, great marketing. However, he never, you know, he never left his hotel room. He knew, he must have known that it was just too dangerous, not well prepared enough, and
his instinct kicked in, and ended up being given to Kenny Powers, and another Canadian stuntman, and of course, it was a disaster. He lived.
No one died.
No. But if you could, the clip is amazing. The car just disintegrates and makes it only about a tenth of the way there before crashing into the water,
with a parachute and again falling apart in the air. I mean, this car was not gonna ever make this jump.
Kenny Powers' problems started on the ramp. The bumps, which had worried Carter, made the car bounce, cracking the fiberglass body. Powers was thrown around inside the cockpit, and he couldn't keep his foot on the pedal. As a result, the car, which was supposed to leave the ramp at 270 miles an hour, was only going 180. There was not enough thrust to make the trip. The wind caught the car, ripping off parts of the cracked bodywork, causing the parachutes to deploy ahead of schedule. This was fortunate. They saved Kenny Powers' life.
Ken Carter, who from a relatively poor and like childhood in Montreal, decided that he was going to do something remarkable with his life, and he just decided it was going to be a stuntman. So he learned all the tricks of the trade, because there are tricks to making these. In his case, it was like demolition cars, and like
how to T-bone and how to jump.
Because these guys would jump cars, but sometimes purposely crash the car.
Them. Yeah.
They'd purposely crash the car for entertainment's sake, including often actually getting quite reasonably injured, but that being part of the shtick, like getting taken to the hospital with, like I say, a broken foot or something.
While you're still speaking to the audience, you're still, you know, you're still in character, you're on the mic, and you're going into the ambulance, you know, like as the stuntman doing the show.
Ken Carter jumps cars for a living, and people like to see him do it. They come for the thrill of watching a man risk his life, watching a man fly a car and crash it at 50 miles an hour. Ken Carter's been doing that for 20 years, three times a week.
Please. Okay, take me over to the microphone, please. Ladies and gentlemen, believe me, we'll be back here tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. They're just going to take me in, x-ray. I don't think it's broken. I think it's badly sprained. I slammed up against the side of the transmission. But believe me, we'll be back here tomorrow night. At 8 o'clock sharp, we'll be back here tomorrow night. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
The other side that we could talk about here is the fact that it's show business. It's a spectacle. It's a circus. It's a freak show. It's a news bit. It's an attention grab. What percentage of it is real? How much of it is professional wrestling, if you know what I mean?
And in that documentary on Ken Carter, he worked a lot of the circuit of the stunt car circuit around North America. He traveled with a little team in his Winnebago and his car. And every single show, he crashed the microphone for the PA and come to his car and he'd be like, "Yeah, I barely made it, but I think I'm going to be all right." And sometimes he actually was injured, but other times he wasn't.
That's awesome.
Ken was born here as Kenneth Gordon Polischek. He left school at 14 with only a grade 4 education and got that job
delivering groceries. But Ken was ambitious. He was sure of one thing. He wasn't going to spend the rest of his life at any 9-to-5 job.
We had bunk beds up here where we could all get in. And then we turn around and here we used to sit and fight to look out the window. But right out here, we used to sit and fight to see who's going to look out the window. And I really don't know at what. I want to say that, you know, we're looking to see maybe what tomorrow is going to bring. I'm a healthy specimen, and this is where I came from. And there's nothing the matter with this place. And, you know, and this is how I feel about it. You know, and I get, somebody asks me about, what about your childhood? What about it, you know? What about the skinny, cross-eyed, bow-legged kid that used to play in his backyard? Now I'm sitting on the threshold of life.
It's interesting to try to understand, like, the motivation of people who do stunt people. And I think in that documentary you mentioned, when he's talking about his childhood, you know, growing up in the slums of Montreal, and, you know, he had a grade 4 education, and, you know, he, but, you know, as you said, they knew what was on the other side of the railroad tracks was something else from what they were experiencing. And he described his life as, what was it, living on the threshold of life. That he was living on the threshold of life now. And I think that's such, so descriptive of what must be the appeal and the feeling of a successful stunt.
In which you have cheated death, in a sense.
You have that incredible survival fear. But yeah, exactly. You've managed to pull something off that's so outside of our comfort zone. And yes, you're really feeling your life because you're on the threshold of life and death. He did pass away from a stunt, did he not?
So Ken Carter eventually did meet his end in a stunt in Peterborough.
So this would not have been a large crowd.
It didn't take long for Carter to move into promotion mode, giving Czech's reporter Tricia Hellingman a sense of just how the big jump would play out.
When they say zero, I'll hit that rocket car back on that ramp, come down the 300-foot runway to the edge of this pond where it'll be a 12-foot high ramp, 60 feet long. I'll hit that ramp at 100 mile an hour, climb to an altitude of approximately 45 feet in the air over the pond. Destination, target area, on the other side of the pond.
Canadian daredevil
stunt driver Ken Carter was killed early today trying to beat his own world record. We have this report from James Careless of our affiliate CHEX in Peterborough, Ontario.
No, and there were so many things going wrong leading up to the actual stunt itself. It was delayed for hours and hours, and there's myriad little problems. And then when he went to do the jump, it went horribly wrong, and he finally lost his life. But there is where what was clear there is that he seemed to have lost his edge of instinct, or having that fear. It wasn't kicking in sufficiently, because anyone could kind of see that this was going to go
the wrong. Show must go on was overriding the survival mechanism, the fear to make sure that the show was also gonna, you know, maybe you get hurt, but you're gonna survive it.
Kenny. The darnest thing I've ever seen. You gotta be, your adrenaline's gotta be pumping.
Well, it's pumping, Mike. Well, I'll tell you what, you wanna talk about a jolt, that'll really give you a jolt right in there, Mike. It's a tough thing to do. Anything can happen in this acetone.
You know, we talked about this earlier, that there's a lot of kids out there watching who look at Evel Knievel, look at guys like yourself as heroes. Would you recommend them to do this?
Sure, Mike, but I mean, sure, but do it like I did. Go out, get a job. I started with the Joey Chitwood Thrill Show when I was just 17 years old. It was 2 years as a ramp boy before I even got a hands on a steering wheel. And since then, but I was taught by one of the greatest stuntmen alive, Joey Chitwood Sr. I mean, what more can you ask? For the kids that are out there, you want a job like this? Go to school. There are a dozen thrill shows that you can go out and get a job with, Mike, and they'll teach you to trade and be glad to teach you to trade.
Kenny, I'm glad you're all right. You're absolutely all right. Sensational. Thanks
all right.
A lot.
Thank you.
Kenny Carter, the Mad Canadian.
Hello, my name is Ken Carter. I'm a stunt driver. I jump cars for a living. People like to see me do it.
You are inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
to death-defying life I lead. I take my chances. I die for a living in the movies and TV. I might fall from a tall building. I might roll a brand new car. Cause I'm the unknown stuntman that makes Eastwood look so fine.
In the 1979 film High Point, Christopher Plummer loses his grip and plunges to the ground from the tallest building in the world. Of course, it's Star Robinson, once again doing the impossible. A parachute hidden under his jacket released 3 seconds from the concrete street.
What were you thinking of when you pushed off?
I was hoping it was going to work. What else?
Any doubts?
Yeah, always have doubts. I did.
The 120-story building in Toronto, Canada intrigued Dar. And it inspired an idea for a spectacular stunt that would bring him back a year later.
That is the world's tallest freestanding structure, the CN Tower in Toronto, Canada.
With Kathy Lee Crosby as host reporter of a one-hour special featuring Dar performing new stunts, he planned to leap off the tower again, this time without a parachute.
What we're going to do this time is without a parachute, without an airbag, I'm going to jump from CN Tower with nothing but a small wire hooked to me.
Only a small wire to hold him while he fell. Only a small wire to break his fall a second before he would hit the ground.
3, 2, 1.
But the wind factor down the length of the tower hadn't been fully reckoned with. Sudden gusts could smash him into the building at any moment.
Still too much wind.
With Kai Michelson, his trusted engineer and close friend, Dar analyzes the wind and weather every day to determine when it will be a safe time to do the jump and if there will be a safe time.
Dar Robinson, who jumped off the CN Tower in Toronto, which at the time was the tallest freestanding building in the world, it's now since been.
He did it twice.
Yeah.
Two different ways, because once isn't enough.
Once with a parachute, which would open up at kind of at the last minute. And then one with a thin metal wire so that he basically without any parachute, just a wire that would, near the end of his fall, that kind of slows
his
fall.
They had a break. Yeah. They had a way to break him towards.
Yes. And that was a stunt for a movie. I forget the title right now, but
a not very good movie.
Yeah,
stunt is the best thing about the movie.
Yeah, it looks amazing on the film.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing to do.
And
crazy.
As soon as he lands, one of the reporters is like, "So, how did you feel?" And he's like, "Well, I was scared."
Yeah, he's always glad to be alive after every jump.
Scary, very, very scary.
Pushed off.
I was hoping it was going to work. What else?
Any doubts?
Yeah, always have doubts. I did malfunction this once.
Because, you know, they're testing and waiting until the conditions are as correct as they can be, but things can change and gust of wind, and next thing you know, you're splattered against the side of the CN Tower.
These daredevil stuntmen, they're not crazy in the sense that they're just devil may care.
No.
They take a lot of effort.
They're going to survive. They have to take the time. And I mean, he worked with an engineer, Dar Robinson.
Yeah.
Which to do that kind of stunt, you absolutely have to.
I'm afraid of dying. I am not out for the thrills of it. This is my job. I do my job well because it scares me so bad. I do everything in the world to make sure that I'm not going to get hurt there.
But, I mean, it is also very strange to, once you've jumped off the CN Tower with a parachute, want to jump off the CN Tower a second time. Although, who knows, it might be a great thrill.
By definition, stuntmen must also be showmen. But some of Dar's colleagues felt he often went too far with a number of his daring, one-of-a-kind feats. Stuntman Lauren James disagrees with them.
And a lot of things he did, others would consider, were
Daredevil. But where the line was drawn, what made Dar different, first, he was an athlete. He wasn't macho. He wasn't trying to be a big shot or anything else. It was a challenge to him physically and mentally to create and to do what he was trying to do. But what made the difference in Dar when he got right to that line of being the daredevil is that Dar planned it.
We heard a clip of the first time when he lands with the parachute and a reporter comes up and asks him kind of the obvious question, were you scared? And he said, well, of course I was. And they were like, were you worried about anything? Yeah, that it wouldn't work, you know, and I'd be dead.
Yeah. But he said it all with a smile. And that must be the Super Dave inspiration.
Hello, everybody. I'm John Marsden. Welcome to what I know promises to be the most electrifying and the most dangerous stunt ever attempted in the world. It was 1 year ago today, Daredevil Dar Robinson jumped from the CN Tower in Toronto, Canada. Dar Robinson survived that jump because he used a life-saving cable. Well, in just a few moments, Daredevil Super Dave Osborne will attempt to jump from the tower only using a nylon protective cord. Super Dave is at the top of the tower right now preparing to jump. So let's go to the top of the tower to our man on the scene, Mike Walden.
Well, thank you, Johnny, but I'm afraid we have some bad news up here. Super Dave, what's the story?
Well, Mike, as you can see, and I'm sure you can feel up here, the wind is about 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
And about 10 minutes ago, we threw a sandbag off the edge and 30 feet down and hit the side of the tower and disintegrated. So there's no way that I can do this stunt today.
Well, there's no need to apologize, Super Dave. So what I'm going to do is just wish you the best luck in your next stunt, wherever it might be or whenever. Well, this is Mike Walden returning it to our announcer down below.
I think
that's the smartest
here.
Thing you ever did.
Hey, I would have been splattered all over the side of
the
thing.
Of course you would. That's good.
Holy
shit! I can't believe it. I have to get the post school. I got it. The ball.
Yeah, John, I'm just fine.
Terrible, terrible fall, but you seem to be all right. Are you going to be all right?
Why are you talking to me? I need an ambulance.
Those guys, and the guys are jumping off the CN Tower, like they... The kind of those would be like the vertigo risk takers. What is vertigo? It's like a body's like serious alarm that like you are about to fall and it's gonna break. And when that alarm goes off and you say "fuck you," I'm jumping anyway.
When you're dangling your feet over the edge of the CN Tower.
Yes.
Everyone's going to feel that fear. And many of us will be like, well, this is the last place I want to be. And you retreat from it. And I guess you'd be safe.
Right.
But this guy, no, he wants to defeat that fear.
What he wants is to really enjoy being alive. They need to have the brush with death to be able to know kind of day from night. They're just not satisfied that they are alive. The alarm isn't ringing loud enough. So they're like, I think if I jump off, I'll get that alarm. They're vertigo junkies. And vertigo is all about like, oh man, there is an off switch. And that is compelling and makes you want to enjoy the time before the battery dies.
He is the new Evel Knievel. No stunt is too dangerous for Steve Trotter. This weekend, the Daredevil had crowds cheering as he took on the raging waters of Niagara Falls and won. It flows with an awesome force and crashes onto a deadly combination of jagged rocks and raging white water. 14 Daredevils have taken the plunge over Niagara Falls. Only 10 have survived. 33-year-old Steve Trotter has made it twice, this time with a female partner. Rescuers risked their lives to pull the half-ton crash capsule out from the rocks. Now, Trotter and friend face a fine and possible jail time. But this morning, the team that helped plan the stunt celebrated their death-defying feat.
He wanted to be the only man to bring a girl over for the very first time, and he did it.
What about the Niagara Falls Daredevils?
So the other side of daredeviling, and the Niagara Falls one, I think, is one. I mean, it's maybe the most awesome one when you go over in a barrel. That just blows my mind. Because you can't even see. You can't even enjoy it. Like, I guess if you're free-falling, it's like, oh, look, there's where I used to live and shit. But you're in a barrel, curled up into some kind of, like, cocoon, and thrown over the biggest waterfall.
You are listening to The Kaleidoscope Gallery. The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let's give a great Canadian welcome to a man who is known throughout the world as the last of the gladiators, the all-time king of the daredevils, Evel Knievel.
My name is Evel Knievel. I'm a professional daredevil.
Fearless or foolhardy, Robert Craig Knievel broke more than 50 bones during his career. And it wasn't his ability to succeed, but his history of bouncing back after awful crashes that created his legend.
The further the jump got, more cars and trucks and buses I jumped, it became a life-risking profession, not just a show.
And makes it! Less than a year later, Evel was the headliner at Caesar's Palace. His horrifying crash shocked the public. Even more shocking was the fact that he would jump again.
I was unconscious for about 29 days. I would say that that gave me a lot of notoriety all over the country, yes, that I was able to get up after that accident and continue on with my career.
It was in 1974 at the Snake River Canyon in Idaho that we watched Evel stuff himself into his part motorcycle, part steam-powered rocket.
Two, one.
As his power plant ignited, his parachute deployed and Evel fell short of the river. Did the failure frustrate his ambition or save his life?
Evel Knievel, like, I think he definitely makes the claim to be the world's best stuntman or daredevil.
Well, the footage you showed me was very interesting. I started to see a pattern and an understanding of his genius, which wasn't like jumping giant vehicles stacked in a row. His genius was in getting people to turn out. So he had to go down at least once every few jumps, like a rag doll. And maybe it wasn't even real. But very likely it was real. He had to go down to create the anticipation that he would go down again. And he, in the clips you showed me, he reminded the audience, like in the upcoming jump, like, I'm probably gonna die here. I'm gonna break every bone in my body. And by the way, I've already broke every bone in my body, and my whole
system is made of like rubber chicken. But I'm going to break it again. If you'll tune in to the Wide World of Sports.
Right.
Here he goes, and he will go. Down, and he is hurt. Oh, my God.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are the last people ever see me jump, because I will never, ever, ever jump again. I'm through.
If I want to walk out of this stadium, I'm all done. I'm going to walk.
He goes too far, babe. We'll never make it.
I can make it. You make it even?
You're crude enough, pal.
Take me out. Let me walk out. Please let me walk out. Help me out, Frank.
That does seem to be a pattern that emerges later with stuntmen like Ken Carter, for example, that there is an aspect of this whole daredevil, the pitch that is a daredevil, the selling point of a daredevil is that they could easily become injured or worse. And so in order to keep that, to foment that intrigue amongst the audience, you have to actually crash once in a while to invoke that.
To remind them that this isn't rigged and that, and he kept saying, what the people like is that I get back up and do it again.
Right.
Like by the time you like, oh, that guy's going to jump the 13 buses again. Everyone's like, oh, I'm not tuning in. I've seen them jump those buses. But it's like, oh, last time he jumped the 13 buses, he like crashed and broke every bone in his body. Now he's doing it again. Then you're like, okay, let's see how's he going to pull it off. And like Wembley Stadium, the double decker buses. I remember that. That resonated with me like as a time in the, was that in the 80s?
It was in the late 70s.
I have never jumped 13 buses. I have never jumped this high before in my life with the exception of the Snake River Canyon. You people here today have been a wonderful, wonderful crowd. I'm glad that you all made it. And now I'm going to do my best to make it. Right across these 13 London buses, I'm going to land right on this X. You hang on to your seats, I'll hang on to the handlebars, and we'll get this over with.
Late 70s. So yeah, it was just like a small child.
Well, when you and I were growing up, I remember I lived in Britain at the time, but even over there, Evel Knievel was absolutely massive, and maybe it has something to do with the Wembley Stadium jump. But kids, there were so many kids' toys and stuff.
This is Evel Knievel and the Evel Knievel shock-absorbing stunt cycle. You can make him do wheelies, backstands, even midair somersaults.
But imagine bringing your kids out to watch a man have his body destroyed, which is basically what you're going there hoping. Or not necessarily hoping, but you know that's on the table, right? That's the excitement of it, right? Well, will he die or will he live?
I am a professional life risker, and I am the best in the world at it. There have never been none before me, nor there will never be none after me.
Here's, I think, probably if we were to really research the whole thing being a show and there's no, and that nobody was actually getting injured in that, the real evidence would come from the insurance companies. Because ABC, Wide World of Sports, not letting a man die on air with all their sponsors and their insurance requirements. No fucking way was that real.
So you're saying that the liabilities that would be involved in such risk, like extently risky.
Right.
And so no one would underwrite it in the first place.
I don't know. Those companies are pretty buttoned up. They are buttoned up. They have rooms of lawyers getting in people's face, and they're going to be like, oh yeah, we're going to let this guy jump 17 double-decker buses on a motorcycle, fall, break his back on TV, and then and in front of 50,000 or 180,000 people or whoever they got in Wembley Stadium, and then you know, go out to the pub after for a drink. That just can't be allowed.
The ABC Wild World of Sports was not live. It was, you know what I mean? So it was edited after the fact, but you'd have to think they'd be doing promo for it before the event took place. And then it would occur, and if something like horrible happened, they could choose not to air it, but everyone would know it had happened.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat. The human drama of athletic competition. This is ABC's Wide World of Sports.
They didn't even broadcast these things live?
No. Well,
really? This was not live?
No.
So, okay, so halfway up the ramp, Evil Knievel is pulled off the motorcycle on a cable. It's like, cut. And the crash test dummy is placed upon the motorcycle by a stunt or like some kind of acrobat.
I can't even explain to you the feeling in your stomach. When you ride up there on that takeoff ramp and look across that thing, can't even tell you. You cannot describe the feeling that you have to have inside of you to make you back off of that takeoff ramp after you've looked at it and turn around and go back and then take a run at it and try and jump across it. It is the most challenging, crazy, suicidal feeling in the world to do that.
In the case of Evel Knievel, I think there's a number of examples, and possibly even Ken Carter, in which he actually does get physically hurt because it adds to the whole mystique.
Oh, yeah, I think that's right. I think he's perpetually injured. And sometimes, I don't know, I mean, you think... No, there's no way. He's too sharp at the end, man. That many bangs on the head.
Yeah. He died in, what was it, 2005 or 7? And he seemed pretty healthy for someone who has broken 50 bones and fallen so hard. And
Evel Knievel is about to make the jump over Snake River, Idaho. It's the realization of his long-held ambition, the pinnacle of his abilities to promote himself. It's also the most dangerous jump he's ever attempted. Thousands have gathered on the canyon's edge, and the event is beamed live on closed-circuit TV into cinemas across the country. At 3:36 p.m., the countdown begins.
3, 2, 1.
At liftoff, something goes terribly wrong. As the Sky Cycle leaves the launch ramp, the emergency parachutes have prematurely opened, sending it spiraling to the canyon floor. The Sky Cycle had landed just feet from the edge of Snake River. Knievel had survived, but almost immediately, there were serious doubts about what really happened. After all the hype and promotion, there was a suspicion that Knievel had pulled the emergency chute on purpose, that the whole event was one big PR stunt.
On the Snake River jump, it apparently the rocket malfunctions, but it's one of those jumps that looks so impossible to do. And at the last minute, the thing breaks apart, just like Ken Carter's rocket car over the giant jump. And it's, I think it's designed to break apart. No one's ever going to make that jump It's supposed to break, the car's supposed to break apart and fall down with its parachute and the guy be like somewhat okay. Everyone knows the Ken Carter car because at one point you say they're just going to slap some little wings on it and it's going to fly over the St. Lawrence. No, it was never intended to. It was intended to pretend it was going to. Someone said that at the last second, Evel Knievel pulled a lever that he shouldn't have, which basically made the parachute come out.
Well, that's what he really is a magician. Evel Knievel is not a stuntman, but one of the world's greatest magicians.
Before we part, let me leave you with a quote from Evel Knievel, where he states, "In every adversity, there is an equivalency of benefit if you just look for it." I hope you've enjoyed this excursion through the Kaleidoscope Gallery. Until next time, and remember, keep it surreal.
You have been listening to the many colors of the Kaleidoscope Gallery.